We are recording and broadcasting.
Chair, we are ready to start whenever you are.
Thank you very much. Good afternoon, everyone. I call this meeting of the State Lands Commission to order. I am Lieutenant Governor Eleni Kounalakis. Welcome to our completely virtual State Lands Commission meeting. Ms. Lucchese, will you please call the roll of the commissioners in attendance?
Certainly. State Controller Betty Yee.
Here.
Gail Miller, representing the Department of Finance.
Here.
Chair and Lieutenant Governor Eleni Kounalakis.
Present.
Madam Chair, we have a quorum present. In addition, I would like to identify the members of the staff of the commission and the Attorney General's office present for this virtual meeting. I am Executive Officer Jennifer Lucchese. I'm joined by Chief Counsel Seth Blackman, Meeting Liaison Renee DeLeon, Assistant Executive Officer Colin Connor, Supervising Deputy Attorney General Andrew Vogel, and our Zoom co-hosts Katie Robinson-Phillip, Mike Farina, and Phil Schlater. I'm happy to turn over to you.
Thank you very much, Ms. Lucchese. For the benefit of those joining us virtually, the State Lands Commission manages state property interests in over 5 million acres of land, including mineral interests. The commission also has responsibility for the prevention of oil spills at marine oil terminals and offshore oil platforms, and for preventing the introduction of marine invasive species into California's marine waters. Today, we will hear requests and presentations involving the lands and resources within the commission's jurisdiction. We recognize that the lands we manage have been inhabited for thousands of years by California's native people and take seriously our trust relationship with these sovereign governments. I want to take a moment to honor the California Native American communities all across the state for persisting, carrying on diverse cultural and linguistic traditions, and sustainably managing the land that we now share. Native people have maintained a constant presence on the landscape for many thousands of years, and they are essential stewardship partners, whether along the coast, along the rivers and valleys, or in our fragile deserts. We thank California Native American communities for participating in this commission's activities and for their essential role in maintaining and adding to our state's rich cultural legacy. The next item of business will be public comment. Before I open the public comment period for items not on the agenda, first, let me thank everyone, especially our stakeholders and members of the public, for taking the time to join our virtual meeting. Now, I'd like to turn it over to Ms. Lucchese to quickly share some instructions on how we can best participate in this meeting so that it runs as smoothly as possible.
Thank you, Chair Kounalakis. First, everyone, please make sure you have your microphones or phones muted to avoid any background noise. For members of the public, if you would like to speak either during our public comment period or during a public comment period that is part of an agenda item, you will need to do so in one of two ways. First, if you are attending on the Zoom platform, please raise your hand in Zoom. If you are new to Zoom and joined our meeting using the Zoom application, please click on the hand icon at the bottom of your screen. When you click on that hand, it will raise your hand. Second, if you're joining our meeting, you must press star 9 on your keypad to raise your hand to make a comment. If you are calling in and want to view the meeting, including the PowerPoint presentations, please view the meeting through the CalSpan Live webcast link. There will be a slight time delay, but it will avoid an echo or feedback from using the Zoom application and your phone. If you emailed us with a request to speak, please also raise your hand so we don't inadvertently miss you. We will call on individuals who have raised their hands in the order that they are raised using the name they registered with or the last three digits of their identifying phone number. After you are called on, you will be unmuted so that you can share your comments. Please also remember to unmute your computer or phone and identify yourself. You will have a limit of 3 minutes to speak on an item. Please keep your comments respectful and focused. We will mute anyone who fails to follow these guidelines or at worst dismiss them from the meeting. We have also established an email address to compile public comments for our meetings. The address is cslc.commissionmeetings@slc.ca.gov. We have received various emails from parties that have been shared with all the commissioners prior to the meeting. If we receive any emails during the meeting, they will be shared with the commissioners and made available on our website, along with the public comment letters and emails we have already received. Chair Kunalakis, that concludes my virtual questions. We are ready to move to the general public comment period.
Thank you very much, Ms. Lucchese. And our next order of business is the public comment period. If anyone would like to address the commission on any matter not on today's agenda, please raise your hand and you will have 3 minutes to do so. Katie, please call on the first person who would like to make a public comment.
Thank you, Madam Chair. For our first public speaker, we have Andrea Leon Grossman.
Andrea, can you hear us?
Yes, can you hear me?
Yes, we can.
Hi, dear Commissioner Yee, my name is Andrea Leon Grossman, and I am the Climate Action Director with Azul, an environmental justice organization that works with the Latinx community to protect the coast and ocean. I'm also co-author of 2 books about energy. Today, I want to talk to you about the Huntington Beach Poseidon proposed plant and how its emissions would affect low-income communities of color. Commissioner Yee, in October 19, 2017, you were concerned that you had not heard progress report back about the greenhouse gas emissions. You asked for 3 specific things, Poseidon not to write just a check to fulfill the obligation for greenhouse gas emissions, really develop tubes and technology, and the avoidance of offsets to be actual. And you did not get what you asked for. Poseidon just filed for these permits before the California Council Commission with the exact same greenhouse gas emission plan that they submitted back in 2017. Basically, some investments in green energy and mostly writing a check for offsets. This plan includes highly controversial offsets out of the country in Ecuador. Poseidon's plans to co-locate next to the dirty AES gas plant and use dirty energy from it. The emissions from this plant end up blowing east and affecting communities of color in Santa Ana, Fullerton, and Anaheim. It is not surprising that Poseidon is not complying with a directive from a regulatory agency, as they think they can simply get away with the bare minimum regulations to get their destructive boondoggle built so they can start privatizing water and making a profit center out of the California coast. In order to fulfill the energy needs with the local power and assure green reliability under peak conditions, Poseidon will need to invest and pay for the installation of 100 megawatts of solar on commercial rooftops in Huntington Beach and potentially surrounding cities. The city of Huntington Beach will take responsibility of those soft costs using city staff to identify commercial building candidate sites. Permitting and administration overhead for those profits. Additionally, Poseidon also needs to stay and pay for battery storage for 4 hours of duration at commercial solar installation. And that will cost about $150 million for solar plus $24 million for battery storage for a total of $174 million. Poseidon will have to finance and basically install this renewable energy at that local site and not use those energy credits. We need to ensure environmental justice and not pay to poison schemes. Poseidon's parent company, Brookfield Asset Management, which is a multi-billion foreign corporation, should not have a problem financing such a project on their own. This should also not come out of the California taxpayers or taxpayers as Poseidon is trying to do with the rest of these boondoggle. Again, I really encourage you to look into their scheme. They do not need to write a check, and we do not deserve to be poisoned by Poseidon. Thank you so much.
Thank you. Katie, can you bring up our next speaker?
Yes, thank you, Madam Chair. Our next speaker is Lydia Ponce.
Yes, I'm competing here with the gardener next door, so I apologize. My name is Lydia Ponce. I am Mayo and Quechua. I reside here in the unceded lands of the Tongva people, Sagna in Venice. I want to discuss the failure, the epic failure for Poseidon's no communication, improper communication, and no consent from the local tribal people for their particular project in Huntington Beach. There, it was really wonderful to hear your address and your acknowledgement of California tribal people, because now in existence, you have your EJ committee, your commission, your policy to abide by that acknowledgement is to really hit the brakes on this particular project. The UN provided us with the free and prior informed consent. We need to add consultation before they have consent. Anyone globally has consent from Indigenous people. But let's talk about Poseidon's epic failure. They mailed letters to tribal post office boxes, did not hear from them in the time of epic proportions of this pandemic hitting the entire world. But they consider that to be consultation. They consider that to be consent. We asked them. I personally had emails going back and forth. I can provide any and all of them to seek out the relationships, to seek out the conversations necessary to inform the local tribal people. We had two elders whose families were not only stricken with the pandemic, with this COVID-19, but also two of them had to bail out. There was a lot of loss of life. So there was no consideration from Poseidon in a humanitarian effort, as water is life and life is life when you have this pandemic, that there was no consideration on their part. They didn't need to. They were trying to push this through. Outside of those letters, nothing else was done. And I have written, I had written to them several times saying that I am not the representative. I'm just holding space for the right people to arrive. You'll be hearing from Frankie Orona, who's on the call waiting to share his 3 minutes. And lastly, I'd like to say that if you can possibly stop this process before it hits, stop them dead in their tracks, because whatever kind of shenanigans prior to your EJ committee and commission and policy, they were just pushing it through without any kind of current data, current environmental impact report or study, and old business. And clearly they didn't want to pay for any updated studies or surveys. So stop the process before they go ahead and kill everything in sight in the ocean, the land, and erase the people who are there. They are waiting and ready to help and support in an honest conversation. I thank you for your time.
Katie, do we have the next speaker?
Yes, thank you, Madam Chair. Our next speaker is Frankie Orona.
Haku, haku. Can you hear me?
Yes, we can hear you.
Please. Awesome. Thank you. Good day to each and every one of you. Thank you for your time. You know, my name is Frankie Orona. I'm with Society of Native Nations and the American Indian Movement. I'm also a descendant of the lands of the Los Angeles area. And I'm here to speak a little bit about how I feel like the Tongva people and the Hashiman people and the Chumash people and the Ohlones and all the different tribal communities, bands, families, and clans that live in the region, including the PLC communities in the region, that haven't really been consulted, haven't been brought to the table. You know, much has been said already that I'll probably be just repeating my, you know, repeating what's been said. But I think at this point, you know, those things need to be repeated because history keeps repeating itself. You know, our people and our communities have been ignored time after time after time after time. And there needs to be new approaches. You know, when our elders, I know for a fact that they haven't been reached out to in the right ways for consultation or in the request for consultation. And I don't think any of these projects should be able to move forward without proper consultation. I would never go into someone's house and tell them how or what they should do with their home or what they need to add or take away from their home. You know, they have an inherent right to these lands and to protect these lands for their future generations and for all future generations, because ultimately their decisions on taking care of the land impact all of us and is in our best interest to have a healthier, sustainable future. And so, you know, the processes that have been used to reach out for consultation obviously haven't worked. Our elders and our communities have been devastated by the lies and the abuse You know, feeling as if their voices don't matter. So there needs to be new approaches. There needs to be a new process on making sure that we, you know, the consultation is sought in the right way and that they're brought to the table to make them feel like their voices matter. So they want to take a seat at the table and have these discussions. You beat a community down enough and you treat them wrong. You know, who wants to hang around that kind of behavior or that kind of treatment, you know? And, you know, that's what we're dealing with. We have to make a change. We have to address these issues. We have to include the voices of those that will live directly impacted by these decisions and involve, you know, them, their families, their communities, and their voices, most of all, especially that next generation. I hope your children, our children, everyone's children hold us accountable for what we do today. It's important. We need the change, and we need that inclusion and that transparency. So again, thank you. And I just want to say once again, I don't think any project should move forward until proper consultation is considered and a part of this decision making. Thank you.
Katie, may we have the next speaker, please?
Yes, our next speaker is Alejandro.
Hi, hello. My name is Alejandro Sobrera. I'm the OC Sunrise Movement Hub Coordinator. We're a youth-led movement fighting for a Green New Deal. And today I want to talk about the environmental justice policy at the State Lands Commission and the Poseidon Huntington Beach Desal Project. So Commissioner Yee, you had a hearing in October of 2017 where the Poseidon Project was discussed at length. The transcript from that day is about 377 pages long. And in that same transcript, the word equity is mentioned 0 times. However, it is mentioned 14 times in your environmental justice policy that is only 12 pages long and was published after in 2018, months after the hearing regarding Poseidon. And so many things have changed since 2017, but many have not. Poseidon is still a very powerful corporation with an army of lobbyists trying to convince us all that privatizing water is good, even though its plant in Carlsbad has caused water rates in San Diego to skyrocket. Carlsbad has also failed year after year to deliver the water it promised and has been issued dozens of notices of violations for excessive dumping of concentrated brine and toxic chemicals and has managed not to get fined even once. What has changed is that we now know that the climate crisis is getting worse and that the IPCC report that just came out called desalination maladaption for destroying marine life and the ridiculous amount of energy it uses. We also know that the Carlsbad plant had to shut down for weeks because of red tides, even though Poseidon calls it climate proof and even calls the ocean an infinite source of water when it's really a fragile ecosystem and not their profit center. With a warmer climate, we will have more red tides and their existing plant will have to be shut down more frequently. Your environmental justice policy talks about impacted communities, analyzing impacts and supporting cleaner industry. I think those must be looked at again by State Lands, especially with the EJ policy. My generation would have to bear the brunt of this destructive and polluting project, and it's simply unconscionable that Poseidon could sail through without considering the environmental justice impacts to the most vulnerable and climate equity. So Poseidon pretty much wants me to pay with my pocketbook and my health for this boondoggle, and I'm asking you, Commissioner Yee, to reconsider the lease and deny it based on the State Lands Commission EJ policy. Thank you.
Katie, can we have the next speaker, please?
Yes, our next speaker is Gage Point.
Katie, is the name of the next speaker?
Sorry, the next speaker is Gage Point. Gage, you are unmuted, so if you could try speaking, please. Let's make sure your audio works.
Katie?
Yes, we're having issues with your audio, so if you could please try calling in and raise your hand by calling in, then we'll call on you next. Thanks. Our next speaker is Bob Kurz.
Are you able to hear me?
Okay, we can hear you. Please go ahead, Mr. Kurz.
Thank you. Good afternoon, Madam Chair and Commissioners. My name is Bob Kurz, and I'm a longtime slip tenant in Dana Point Harbor. I'm participating at today's meeting to object to the recently announced slip fee increase to take effect on October 1st of this year. As you're undoubtedly aware, Dana Point Harbor was created as a public marina under the Tidelands Trust. In the past, rate increases have largely reflected cost of living adjustments. However, this latest increase bears no relationship to the rate of inflation. What changed? In 2018, Dana Point Harbor Partners, LLC, assumed management responsibility for Dana Point Harbor and its environs. Since that time, operation of the marina seems to be run more for the benefit of the partners than the public. In 2019, Dana Point Harbor Partners completely changed the methodology for determining slip fees from slip size to overall vessel length. In my case, this resulted in a 10% monthly fee increase. Now on October 1st, my monthly slip fees will increase by an astonishing 39%. For me, the cumulative effect of these back-to-back fee increases is 49%. This seems, at the very least, excessive, if not egregious. Clearly, something is wrong. In the past, slip fees at marinas from San Diego to Santa Barbara were included in the periodic rate survey. This time, Dana Point Harbor Partners surveyed only marinas located in Orange County, including Newport Harbor, which has the most expensive slip fees in Southern California. It should be noted that some of these marinas are also managed by the same individuals who comprise the Dana Point Harbor Partners. Under the existing master lease agreement with Orange County, it's become very clear that Dana Point Harbor is not being managed in the public interest. Therefore, I'm respectfully requesting the commission to initiate an investigation into Dana Point Harbor Partners' rate setting methodology to ensure it's both fair and equitable, as well as in the public's interest. Thank you.
Katie, may we have our next speaker?
Yes, thank you, Madam Chair. Our next speaker is Ann Eubanks.
Madam Chair and Commission, my name is Ann Eubanks. I'm the president of Dana Point Boaters Association. Because of the massive proposed increase in slip fees proposed by the lessees of the Dana Point Marina, we believe the Tidelands grant requirement of maximum reasonable public access has been violated, and the grantee, the County of Orange, has abdicated its responsibility to monitor and protect the public interest. We are therefore asking this commission to step in and help assure the public rights are protected. Dana Point Harbor is a small boat marina. After revitalization, the average slip size will be 32 feet. Dana Point Boaters Association has been advocating for Dana Point boaters for 14 plus years. During the many years of revitalization planning, we've had a seat at the table with all entities involved. We were at the table because we're collaborative, we know and understand the harbor, we're reasonable people, and we're discreet. After Dana Point Harbor Partners was selected as the lessee and steward of the harbor for the next 66 years, we collaborated with them on marina design and concerns about the dry storage. We were told on more than one occasion that there would be no slip increases until boaters were in their new slips. After the master lease was signed and after approval of the CDP, things changed. We appeared to be more of a nuisance than a help to Dana Point Harbor Partners. In fact, to quote Joe Uberoff, the Dana Point Boaters Association is a lightning rod of negativity. I assure you, commissioners, we are not. On May 14th, Joe Uberoff of Bellwether Financial, the Dana Point Harbor Partners entity tasked with the revitalization of the marina, sent a one-page letter with a two-page attachment to Matt Miller, Chief Real Estate Officer of Orange County. That letter contained a sentence which should have immediately alerted county officials to irregularities, but it appears it did not. The sentence was, the marina has not implemented a rate increase since July 2017, when the increase averaged 1.9%, far below average increases in the market. If I had been a county official responsible for oversight, I would have immediately replied, no, Joe, that's not correct. The last county implemented rate increase was in July 2018, and it was a 2.8% increase. The letter went on to justify why only Orange County marinas should be included in the very elementary market rate survey they supplied the county. It appears there's truly no oversight of the 66-year lease, and neither the county executives nor the Board of Supervisors feel it necessary to respond to their constituents regarding the matter. At least three board members of Dana Point Boaters Association have supplied very detailed written comments for today's commission meeting. I'm asking you to please review the comments and hold OC executives and supervisors accountable. There's a lot more information and facts to support voters' concerns, and we are willing to supply to the commission. We hope that you will give us a seat at your table to make our case. Thank you.
Thank you, Katie. May we have the next speaker, please?
Thank you, Madam Chair. We'll try again, Darcy Trask. Darcy, you are able to unmute yourself now, if you could see if that works.
Yes, can you hear me now?
Yes, we can.
Yeah, thank you very much. My questions and comments are in regards to item 40. Should I just wait until that subject is brought up?
Yes, that's right. We're only taking comments for items that are not on the agenda. So you will have an opportunity later to speak up on that item.
Thank you.
Thank you. Katie?
Thank you, Madam Chair. At this time, we have no other hands raised to provide public comment.
Thank you, Katie. That concludes our public comment period. The next item of business will be the adoption of the minutes from the Commission's meeting of June 29th, 2021. May I have a motion to approve the minutes in a second?
I'll second.
All right, so we're doing it verbally. We don't have to do it with raised hands. Right. All right, so we have a motion from Commissioner Miller and a second from Commissioner Yee. Ms. Lucchese, will you please conduct a roll call vote?
Certainly. Commissioner Yee.
Aye.
Commissioner Miller.
Aye.
Chair Kunalakis.
Aye.
The motion passes unanimously.
The next order of business is the executive officer's report. Ms. Lucchese, may we please have the report?
Certainly. Well, first I want to report on our two well abandonment and decommissioning projects. First, with regards to the Rincon Island and onshore facility project, phase one work, the plugging and abandoning the wells and oil facilities at the former leases at Rincon Point, is complete, as we've reported previously. The Rincon Island and onshore site were placed into caretaker status officially in July. The facilities will remain in caretaker status while the phase two feasibility study and CEQA analysis are completed, and until the phase three work, the final island and onshore decommissioning commences. Padre Associates, who is our environmental consultant, is currently conducting surveys and assessments to inform the feasibility study and subsequent CEQA document, which will evaluate decommissioning alternatives for the final disposition of the island and the onshore property. A bathymetric study of the island and surrounding area and a coastal engineering study have been completed. Ongoing work includes site assessments for hydrocarbon contamination, site characterization, a marine biology study, an engineering assessment, and an environmental baseline assessment. We are continuing our robust public outreach to community and stakeholders. We hosted a community town hall in April and a feasibility study workshop in June. This was followed by a questionnaire staff sent to the Muscle Shoals residents requesting their input on phase two. Staff will convene another town hall after we release the draft feasibility study, which is expected to occur in late September or early October. We have also begun informal consultation with the California Coastal Commission, the State Coastal Conservancy, Fish and Wildlife Service, the National Marine Fisheries Service, and Ventura County. And we anticipate presenting the final feasibility study to the commission at its meeting in December. As it relates to the Platform Holly and Piers 421 decommissioning project, we continue to maintain and monitor the platform and onshore facilities to ensure public health and safety. Staff and ExxonMobil are planning to reactivate the mothballed Platform Holly rig in preparation for resuming well plug and abandonment work. Subcontractor maintenance personnel return to the platform on August 16th to begin a five-week reactivation program. The full complement of personnel are expected to return to the platform in mid-September to begin the well plug and abandonment work. Personnel transport and cargo operations to and from Platform Holly will continue from alternate piers in the area for the foreseeable future, while negotiations to regain access to the Elwood Pier continue. We're really excited to get started, get back started on the plugging and abandonment work at Platform Holly. We had to put that on due to the pandemic. So we've been delayed about a year and a half now. So we're us and ExxonMobil and our contractors are ready to get moving on that again. Last month, staff issued a notice of preparation for the Haskell's Beach oil piers. These are the Piers 421 removal project. And we held a virtual public scoping meeting, actually two of those earlier this month. Staff anticipates releasing the draft environmental impact report later this year. I want to report on our SB 44 Legacy Well Remediation Program. As you know, this program provides up to $2 million per year to address legacy wells and coastal hazards. In July, we successfully plugged and abandoned the Olson 805 well at Summerlin Beach. This is the third well we have reabandoned in Santa Barbara County using the SB 44 funds. The abandonment was completed on time, within budget, and without incident. In April, staff authorized dive work to investigate seeps to determine if any of the leaks observed during the previous drone surveys were associated with another legacy well. Throughout 3 days of diving, eight new well casings were discovered, which were leaking hydrocarbons into the ocean. During the diving operations, old timber piles were also discovered and appear to be remnants of the Treadwell Pier. We intend to address these wells and remnants in the future as part of the SB 44 program. We are developing a plan to prepare the engineering programs, cost and estimates, and establish priorities for additional well abandonments in this fiscal year. And we're excited to continue our successful work and our continued collaboration with our partner agencies and the community. And finally, I want to provide an update on the Hollister Ranch Public Access Program. The Hollister Ranch State Agency team and its consultants have been leading a robust public engagement process for more than a year and a half. The public engagement process began with interviews of 18 stakeholder groups, followed by three public surveys and other interactive platforms for public engagement, two public meetings, and six listening sessions with stakeholders, environmental justice communities, and tribal representatives. Formal tribal consultations were initiated after the release of the conceptual public access plan draft in June and are currently in progress. The Coastal Commission expects to hold its first public hearing on the draft public access program in October of this year. That completes my executive officer's report. I'm happy to answer any questions.
Thank you very much, Ms. Lucchese. Commissioner Yee, do you have any questions or comments?
Not at this time, Madam Chair. Thank you.
Commissioner Miller, do you have any questions or comments? Well, let me just make one quick comment because I know how hard you and your staff have been working on the plugging and abandonment of Platform Holly. These are not simple engineering feats. And so it is very good to hear that progress is being made. And to everyone who is working, from the divers to the legal work that needs to be done to the construction folks out there doing this work. It is a very high priority that that these old legacy wells get plugged and abandoned on time and effectively. So thank you to you and the whole team. The next order of business will be the adoption of the consent calendar. Commissioner Yee, Commissioner Miller, are there any items that you would like removed from the consent calendar?
No.
Ms. Lucchese, please indicate any items which have been removed from the consent calendar.
Certainly. 3, 8, 14, 21 are removed from the agenda and will be considered at a later time.
Thank you. Is there anyone joining us virtually who wishes to speak on any item remaining on the consent calendar? If so, please raise your Zoom hand or dial *9 if joining by phone now. Katie, is there anyone who would like to speak on any item remaining on the consent calendar? Hearing none.
Thank you, Madam Chair. At this time, we have no hands raised.
Hearing none, we will now proceed with the vote. May I have a motion to adopt the consent agenda and a second?
I'll so move, Madam Chair.
I'll second.
We have a motion by Commissioner Yee and a second by Commissioner Miller. Ms. Lucchese, will you please conduct a roll call vote?
Certainly. Commissioner Yee.
Aye.
Commissioner Miller.
Aye.
Chair Kunalakis.
Aye.
The motion passes unanimously.
The next order of business will be the regular calendar. Item 39 is to receive an update on state legislation relevant to the State Lands Commission. May we please have the presentation?
Yes, thank you, Madam Chair and Commissioners. It's hard to believe that the California legislature, as you know, is heading into the last 2 weeks of session with a September 10th adjournment date. Tomorrow, the Senate and Assembly Appropriations Committees will convene to dispense with their suspense file bills. And since members were limited to 12 bills this year, we don't expect as many bills to go to the floor as have in past years, but there will still be a lot, and it will still be an incredibly hectic 2 weeks as the legislature wraps up this year's session. We're expecting to see additional budget bills surface, as well as legislation detailing how the $3.7 billion climate resilience package will be allocated. And our staff will continue to monitor the bills affecting the commission and the amendments coming out of tomorrow's appropriations hearings. Our review is focused on climate change adaptation and sea level rise preparedness related bills, offshore wind energy, plastic pollution reduction, carbon capture and storage, and legislation to plug and abandon hazardous or deserted wells. I wanted to highlight AB 1390 by Assemblymember Borner Horvath, a bill the commission sponsoring that would remove constraints that make it difficult for the commission to invest in property to generate revenue for CalSTRS, among other things. And this bill is on the Senate Appropriations Committee suspense file. We're optimistic it will pass. It's had bipartisan support throughout the process and doesn't have any state cost. We're also pursuing two relatively technical amendments related to the Commission's Marine Invasive Species Program. Those amendments are in SB 822 and SB 824. Both bills are on the Senate floor, and we expect them to go to the governor in the coming days. And then I wanted to highlight SB 796 by Senator Bradford, which the Commission is also supporting. This would allow authorize the County of LA to convey Bruce's Beach, a portion of land within Manhattan Beach, to descendants of the Bruce family. That bill is also on suspense and will be considered tomorrow. And then I wanted to highlight a few more bills, AB 525 by Assemblymember Chu, which is the most substantive piece of legislation on offshore wind energy in many, many years. And if signed into law, would require the State Lands Commission to be part of the process to develop a strategic plan for offshore wind energy development in California. The key provision in AB 525 is a requirement that the Energy Commission, in coordination with other agencies, develop a strategic plan for offshore wind energy development off the California coast and federal waters and submit it to the Natural Resources Agency and the legislature by December of next year. And the State Lands Commission is among the agencies that the Energy Commission must coordinate with when developing that strategic plan. AB 525 also requires the Energy Commission to work with the State Lands Commission to identify suitable sea space for wind energy areas in federal waters sufficient to achieve the offshore planning goals established in the strategic plan. And then I wanted to highlight two climate-related measures that involve the State Lands Commission and are particularly noteworthy in the context of the latest IPCC report released a couple weeks ago, which reported that the world has warmed by more than 1 degree Celsius, nearly 2 degrees Fahrenheit, and that global temperatures are now higher than at any other time in the past 125,000 years. The first bill is SB 83 by Senator Allen, which would require the Ocean Protection Council in consultation with the State Coastal Conservancy to develop a sea level rise revolving loan program to provide low interest loans to local jurisdictions to purchase vulnerable coastal property. SB 83 would require the Ocean Protection Council to consult with the State Lands Commission, among others, to develop the criteria and guidelines to identify eligible vulnerable coastal properties. And then the second bill I wanted to highlight is SB 1 by Senator Atkins. This bill, the California Sea Level Rise Mitigation and Adaptation Act of 2021, would, among other things, create within the Ocean Protection Council, the California Sea Level Rise State and Regional Support Collaborative to provide information, support, and grants to local governments to plan for and address sea level rise. The bill requires the Ocean Protection Council to coordinate with other land management planning and coastal management agencies, including the State Lands Commission, as they administer grants and on the kind of information and support that is provided to local, regional, and other state agencies. So that summarizes my update on the sea level rise and climate change adaptation bills and the offshore wind energy legislation and the other bills that staff is monitoring. We'll continue to monitor these bills and report back to the commission at our October meeting with an update on these and other bills coming out at the end of this year's session. Thank you.
Madam Chair, you're on mute.
Thank you very much, Ms. Pemberton. Commissioner Yee, do you have any comments or questions?
Yes, Madam Chair, I just had one request, if I could. Really appreciate the update on the pending legislation. I was wondering if I could make a request of staff for the next meeting to perhaps compile just all the actions to date, particularly related to the budget. There were several major investments in the budget that really comport with some of the goals in our own strategic plan relative to work in this area and in other areas. I just think during this historic time when we've made these investments, it might be good just to start tracking, you know, some of those so that we can just look at the progress of certainly the work of our commission, and partnerships are important to us as we work with other entities as well. But just to maybe have that in one place so that we can really measure the progress in a concerted way so that year after year, as we either continue to enhance our investments or to certainly look at, you know, just what our return is on them, that we have those just noted in a single place.
Yes, absolutely.
Thank you. Commissioner Miller, questions or comments? Okay, Katie, do we have any public comments? If anyone would like to make a comment, please raise your Zoom hand now.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Right now we have one public commenter, and that is Darcy Trask. If you could please unmute yourself to speak.
Yes, can you hear me?
Yes.
Once again, is this in regards to item number 40?
That is the next thing we're going to take up in a moment.
Oh, I'm stepping back.
All right, thank you.
Thank you.
All right. So thank you very much for the informational item, and we will look forward to a report back at our next meeting per the request of Commissioner Yee. Our next item, item 40, is to consider authorizing staff to enter into contracts for removal activities along the Crockett waterfront near the Carquinez Bridge. May we have the presentation, please?
Good afternoon, commissioners. My name is Brian Bush. I'm chief of the Land Management Division, and I'll be presenting on item 40 today. This item requests authorization to contract to remove improvements on the Crockett waterfront. Next slide, please. Crockett is a small unincorporated community in northwestern Contra Costa County. The The Crockett Waterfront is located on the south side of the Carquinez Strait where it meets the San Pablo Bay. Next slide, please. Over the years, the Commission has authorized leases for various uses along and near the Crockett shoreline. These include marine oil terminals, a sugar refinery, an interstate highway crossing, a boat repair facility, a marina, restaurant, fishing club, fishing pier, horticultural center, and a wastewater treatment facility. Next slide, please. One of the leases along the waterfront was to Crockett Marine Services for a restaurant, marina, and boat repair facility. The lessee had difficulty maintaining the improvements, and commission staff worked with the lessee for years to bring the lease into good standing. But ultimately, on December 3rd, 2018, the commission terminated the lease due to the lessee's inability to fulfill its obligations to maintain the improvements. Only the Nantucket restaurant remained in good use and condition at the time of lease termination. But the restaurant subsequently closed on February 17, 2019, and in March 2019, the commission paid to board up the restaurant. Since that time, the restaurant has been broken into numerous times and the building fixtures have been stripped and vandalized. The building remains an attractive nuisance. And to date, the commission has expended more than $18,000 continuing to secure the building. Next slide. On August 3rd, 2020, the derelict Crockett boat repair facility adjacent to the restaurant caught fire and burned to the ground. These are some of the images of it before and during the fire. And then in the months following the fire, the commission completed an emergency cleanup with costs exceeding $90,000. Next slide. On December 6th, 2019, the commission authorized a one-year lease to the Nantucket Revitalization LLC to rehabilitate the existing restaurant and make it a regional destination. Staff and the applicant hope to restore it and reopen the Nantucket restaurant. The short-term lease, however, was conditioned upon the applicant obtaining and maintaining a Union Pacific Railroad right-of-way access. The railroad crossing agreement had lapsed along with the prior lease. The only means of accessing the restaurant from the upland required crossing the active railroad. For the safety purposes, a crossing signal would be required. Construction of an additional crossing signal was estimated at around $234,000 a year, with annual maintenance costs exceeding $15,000 a year. This proved too costly for the applicant, and they withdrew their application in April of this year. Today, all the remaining facilities, including the restaurant building, are so dilapidated at this point that there is no longer any economic value in repairing. And the Contra Costa Fire Chief has determined that the remaining derelict improvements along the waterfront are a health and safety hazard and need to be removed. Next slide, please. On December 9th, 2020, Commission staff hosted a virtual town hall meeting to discuss the current state of affairs at the Crockett Waterfront, to notify the community and interested parties of staff's intent to request removal of the derelict restaurant building and marina facilities, and to solicit community input and feedback on staff's proposal. Public outreach included engagement with community leaders, district staff, and local businesses and residents of Crockett, and the meeting was well attended. Staff also assessed the building to determine if it contained asbestos. The assessment determined that there was asbestos, and the asbestos will be remediated as part of the scope of the proposed contract and process for removal and disposal. On July 26th, as part of outreach for the proposed commission action, staff sent 575 letters to members of the Crockett community and key stakeholders to notify them of the proposed action today. Next slide, please. On October 18th, 2018, the commission authorized expenditures from three Kaplov Bank Fund subaccounts for the removal and disposal of abandoned vessels, marine debris, navigational hazards or obstructions, and derelict structures in the Crockett marina. The removal work contemplated and any contracts awarded in furtherance of this work would be funded from the same Kapilov subaccounts. The remaining amount of funds in the subaccounts at this time is approximately $598,000. Staff is requesting authorization to enter into contracts up to the full amount of the remaining funds in the subaccounts to remove the restaurant building and the marina facilities in the interest of public health and safety. Next slide, please. So this is an overview of the facilities there. You'll see the freeway off to the side there, and then the Bass Fishing Club here. The remaining facilities are the areas of removal. In phase one, we would be requesting, would involve removal of the Nantucket restaurant building and related facilities that are in that red circle there. Next slide, please. Here's some visuals of what it's looking like in somewhat recent. I think it's deteriorated even more since these photos, but this gives you an idea of what the area looks like at the ground level. Next slide. Phase two of what we'd be looking at would be to remove some of the sunken vessels just offshore there. That would involve the removal of a 45-foot sunken workboat, a sunken land craft that's off the edge there of the restaurant building. And then also we call it the barge on barge, but a partially sunken steel barge. And then there's also a small pontoon boat that's further offshore there. Next slide, please. Here's a close-up of those. The barge on barge is in the upper left there. You can see the two vessels off the in the upper right off the restaurant building there. And then the ones shown there that you can see the top of is the workboat. Next slide, please. And then phase three would involve removal of a small crane mounted to steel frames and timber piles, timber caps, stringers, and other debris along the shoreline and the Army Pier walkway and support piles that are extending out off the side of the restaurant building there, you'll see. So next slide. So here's some ground level views of some of the stuff out there. That's next slide. So in conclusion, and staff requests authorization to enter into contracts for removal work at Crockett up to the full amount of the remaining funds in the capital off subaccounts referenced in the staff. Thank you. And that concludes my presentation. Staff's available to answer questions.
Thank you very much, Mr. Bush. And Commissioner Yi, do you have any questions or comments?
Not at this time, Madam Chair.
Commissioner Miller?
Just one, Madam Chair, thank you. And that is that just to the commission team and the staff and the community in Crockett, we did hear this a couple of years ago, and I know how desperately hard everyone in that community worked and how much this area means to the community. So I know that this was done with a lot of thought and consideration and work with the community. And I'm really grateful for that because I know how important that area is. So with that, I'm happy to move the recommendation when you're ready.
Thank you. First, Katie, I believe we have one person we've heard from who would like to speak on this issue. Would you like to call the first speaker, please?
Yes, thank you, Madam Chair. For our first speaker, we have Merv Silverman.
Mr. Silverman, are you there?
There are two Merv Silvermans. Let me try giving permission to the second one to see if that works. Okay.
Can you hear me?
Yes, Mr. Silverman, we can hear you now. Please go ahead.
Thank you. I moved to Crockett 21 years ago from San Francisco, where I had served as director of health. And I found Crockett to be a quaint town, lovely environment, good people, fine weather. But compared to multiple communities along the Carquinez Strait, there was an absolute absence of any real access to the waterfront. with CNH, cogeneration, and the railroad, they block pretty much almost 98% of the access. This small area is the only possibility for access. I think it's so important for you to try and preserve and help us to preserve this space so we can make it a true community waterfront area. As I say, it's lovely here and everything is great, but to have so little space and to see that taken away would be tragic.
Thank you very much, Mr. Silverman. Katie, do we have the next speaker, please?
Yes, our next speaker is Marla Prada.
Hello, can you hear me?
Yes, we can hear you. Please proceed.
Okay, this actually would make more sense after Darcy Trask speaking, but I will go ahead. My name is Marla Parada, and I'm the chairperson for the Crockett Community Foundation. Our mission is to enhance the quality of life in the community now and for generations to come. Our goals are to serve Crockett, Port Costa, and Tormy by providing grants and fundraising assistance to nonprofit organizations in our community. We promote the vitality of nonprofit organizations and foster volunteerism. We promote a sense of community in Crockett and improve community resources. The waterfront along the Carquinez Strait in Crockett is a resource that has been accessible to the public for generations. Since 1995, we've provided over $100,000 in funding to the Carquinez Regional Environmental Education Center, also known as CREEC, that is located near the waterfront and within the jurisdiction of the California State Lands Commission. In addition, in 2018, $22,000 was granted for CEQA compliance for Carquinez Recover the Waterfront project. We've supported CREEC and the Crockett Striped Bass Club through fundraising assistance. The Crockett Community Foundation would be happy to consider grant applications by our local nonprofit organizations to support the use of the waterfront in the future. Thank you.
Thank you, Katie. May we have our next speaker, please?
Yes, our next speaker is Nancy Reiser.
Hi, can you hear me?
Yes, we can. Please proceed.
Thank you. I'm a Crockett resident, past board member of the Crockett Community Foundation, and a former docent for our local museum. Our town is downwind from the Phillips 66 refinery in Rodeo, and the state has recognized that our two towns suffer disproportionate amounts of hazards of environmental pollution and have determined that both towns were environmental justice communities. Let me tell you, you'll be hard-pressed to find a more can-do, scrappier community than Crockett. In fact, one of the spans on the Carquinez Bridge is named after one of our own, iron worker Al Zampa. In fact, it's the only bridge in California named after a blue-collar worker. I have to tell you that the slow degradation of our vibrant, once vibrant marina that occurred on the California State Lands Commission watch has been heartbreaking. The state allowed a tenant to squat for years rent-free. Piers partially crumbled into the sea. Boats sank into the mud. Ironically, two of the many boats hauled out of the mud were State of California oil spill response boats. Our progress with the developer with an excellent track record in rehabbing marinas came to an abrupt halt when the railroad demanded an extortive payment of over $200,000 for railroad safety equipment that the railroad should be obligated to install and maintain on its own dime. Now, this demand has not been made to the more affluent nearby cities of Martinez, Rodeo, Hercules, and Pinole. This pay up or else demand of Crockett, delivered by a private industrial company, effectively denies our access to the waterfront, which is a public right guaranteed by the California Constitution and federal law. It's my view that the railroad's demand and the State Lands Commission intent to demolish the restaurant and piers is the very definition of economic injustice. The Capital Land Bank Act specifies that funds are authorized to manage and improve real estate property for public access. Now, how can these funds be used on something that does not allow public access? I would ask you to proceed with phases 2 and 3 only, with the exception of removing the piers. And in doing so, you would allow the community to surround the restaurant with tall fencing and install security cameras. In doing so, you would allow us the time to work with the railroad and suggest alternatives that can enhance safety, such as fencing parallel to the tracks that can have both pedestrian and vehicle gates, choices that would not economically gut our small town. Put phase one on ice. Save the state $500,000 earmarked for demolition. Allow us to start down the road of responsible economic development so we can bring our historic waterfront back to life. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Katie, may we have the next speaker, please?
Yes, thank you, Madam Chair. Our next speaker is Heidi Petty.
Hi, is it possible to table my comments till after Darcy speaks and reads our letter?
Yes, that's fine. Katie, can we, I don't know who you have in the queue, but could you please put the speakers in the order requested?
Yes, so the next next speaker on our list is Darcy Trask.
Okay.
So
let me...
Okay.
Yes, hi, can you hear me?
Yes, we can.
Okay, thank you very much. So we prepared a letter to the chair and the members of the state. Thank you very much for taking the time today to listen to us. We wrote this letter to inform you of our vision of the Crockett Waterfront, a vision of waterfront access, recreation, commerce, and economic development. We would like to formally request the following changes to your agency's projected description plan. Change and modify 1, removal of the Nantucket restaurant to phase 3 with the following project description changes. Maintain the current utilities, water, swing power, gas line meters, and sewer and septic tank. Keep the piles and building structure, but continue to include the removal of the interior debris and asbestos abatement. This will allow for future environmental sound repurposing and economic development in this environmental justice community. Phase 2 would become phase 1 with the following project description changes. Phase 2, Section D, removal of the Army Pier walkways, but keep the supporting piles for future development. This action would not halt the cleanup progress, but rather enable the community to investigate stakeholders' options and continue on the existing vision plan for the site. The Nantucket lease terminated was executed in December of 2018, and an application for leasing the site was entered between the new developers in February of 2021. This application was pulled by the developers due to costs associated with upgrading the pedestrian crossing. This community-driven process has been hampered by state and post-COVID-19 restrictions. In the time since COVID-19, the restaurant industry has declined. This additional layer of difficulty has greatly hampered our ability to find new prospective stakeholders. We understand the safety issues around the building and dilapidated marina. However, we are committed to finding funding for security solutions, included to, but not limited, fencing and installation of security cameras. In the review of the historical data on the site, we found that the construction was opened in an opening of the 1927 Carquinez Bridge. The Southern Pacific Railway Company backfilled a considerable section of the Crockett shoreline to create a straightened path for its trains. This right-of-way eliminated the curve on Horseshoe Bend. This new and more linear path meant saving valuable time by not having to reduce train speed through the turn. Before the massive backfill project, the original shoreline was dotted with many piers, including residences, business, and a public beach. Port Costa Lumber Company and Tilden Lumber Company and a hotel of Arena Junction and Alberta Slip were all removed during this project. May I request more time, please?
How much more time would you like to request?
Say 2 minutes.
That's fine. Go ahead.
Thank you. The D'Urillo family built a beautiful harbor, which included berth space for boats, large and small, a marine shop, a family restaurant, and a new beach for Crockett residents. The community has enjoyed this area as a place to affordably meet with friends and family. This scenario is precisely what the State Land Commission addresses in their mission statement and recently adopted environmental justice policy. In your report regarding the Nantucket building, it was concluded that the building is potentially historically significant under California Registration of Historical Resources Criteria 2 for its association with Tony D'Urillo, but it does not retain significant integrity to convey its significance. However, the entire marina is a historic site. We feel that this location has been mismanaged for decades. The community deserves a chance to save this wonder space and re-envision the potential opportunities for commerce and recreation in this small town. It is a vital part that the State Lands Commission reconsider the historic community site demolition and improve one of the only remaining shoreline areas in Contra Costa County that can be brought to its functional waterfront district. We are planning to begin the process of making this site a historic landmark. So instead, we ask that you simply support our own ongoing negotiations with the Union Pacific Railway, Contra Costa County, and CNH Sugar regarding the closure of public access to the waterfront. Access to the water to our waterfront is a public right that has been expressed in the California Act of Admission, the California State Constitution, and federal law. It is our hope that the State Lands Commission will support us in these negotiations and do whatever it can to ensure that our waterfront remains open, free, and accessible to our community. Thank you very much for allowing me to make these comments. And this is from the residents of Crockett and myself, Darcy Trask, business owner in Crockett, Larry Hayden with the Crockett Chamber of Commerce, and a number of citizens have signed. And so thank you. Appreciate your time.
Thank you very much. We'll go to the next speaker, but as soon as we finish public comment, Ms. Lucchesi, if you could respond to some of the suggestions and comments that have been raised would be very helpful. Katie, may we have the next speaker, please?
Thank you, Madam Chair. For our next speaker, we have Heidi Petty.
Hello, and thank you, Madam Chair. My name's Heidi Petty. I work for the Contra Costa Resource Conservation District. I'm Watershed Program Manager and kind of overall worker for the Carquinez Street area, all the way from Martitas through Rodeo and Hercules. As you can see, the community really has been involved in this area. We've been kind of working on this for 3.5 years. We've created a vision plan. We have really high hopes for this area. As you know, there's been a lot of issues. You probably heard me speak at almost every meeting that we were on with you. Overall, I believe that if this building is torn down at the beachfront, that our hopes of having something new there are just destroyed. I think that this feeds the fuel for the closure of the railroad crossing. It will speed up that process for them. And I fear that this will be the end of our hope for having access to this beach. The towns of Rodeo and Crockett
deserve to have access to this beach that has been covered in garbage for so many years. They deserve to enjoy it with their children. I think that at this point, you've seen that the community can pitch in and remove all that garbage from the beach that are in some of those pictures. That's all gone almost completely by community effort. I think that the fight has been a really real one for all of us, including you at State Lands. I think that in dealing with a railroad crossing, it's quite obvious that it's a tough go. We have, in fact, though, been able to reduce the cost of that crossing to $180,000 from the $243,000. So that's a good start. We have community commitment and industry commitment to help us in paying for that. But during COVID, it has been very difficult to continue to have site visits and group meetings. So it has really hampered our ability to continue. If you could halt the destruction of the building, at least for the time being, to give us enough time to negotiate with the railroad, keep our crossing open, and potentially find a new person to come in, new business to come in and take over this location and this lease, we would be grateful beyond grateful. We're also very interested in when you do have these Crockett Waterfront public meetings where you meet with just our town, a town hall meeting, how is that reported back to you as a board? We want to just ensure that you're getting all the information that we're providing. There's a lot of hope, love in this community, and we want to make sure that you know we have that. Thank you.
Thank you, Katie. Are there any more speakers who would like to address this item?
Thank you, Madam Chair. Our next speaker is Larry Hayden.
Okay. Can you hear me?
Yes, Mr. Hayden, we can hear you. Please proceed.
Thank you. Well, good afternoon. My name is Larry Hayden, and I'm here representing the Crockett Chamber of Commerce. And I thank you for holding this meeting and for your interest in the Crockett Waterfront. Our waterfront is an important resource and asset to the Crockett community. For well over a decade, the waterfront has been severely neglected and mismanaged by both your tenant and by the State Lands Commission. As a result of this neglect and mismanagement, our community has lost its marina and a beloved restaurant, and now is in danger of losing all access to the waterfront at the hands of the railroad. All of this could have and should have been avoided by proper management of the state lands leases by your agency. We ask you at this critical time, don't compound this community disaster. Please help us to help you restore this area to a beautiful waterfront access and recreational use, sustainably supported by economic uses. Over the past few years, the Crockett community and many community organizations have worked diligently to find and plan a solution to this challenge. When we were close to success, the door was slammed shut by the railroad and then by COVID. We certainly understand your agency's challenge today with the dilapidated buildings and piers and the liability that they represent. And while these are obviously non-functional today, they do represent a valuable basis from which to rebuild the waterfront. I think it's safe to say if the Nantucket building and the piers are removed, nothing new could ever be built. So please, instead of voting to tear this down today, work with us to restore the Crockett waterfront. Thank you.
Thank you, Katie. May we have our next speaker?
Yes, thank you, Madam Chair. For our next speaker, we have Mark Manizon. Mark, you are unmuted. If you can try to see if your audio works, please. If you are having trouble with your audio, if you could please try calling in so that we could hear you, that might be able to help.
So Mark, why don't you go ahead and try calling in? Katie, does he have that phone number?
Yes, the phone number should be on the meeting invitation. I don't have that in front of me, but let me pull that up.
And then meanwhile, we had someone had requested to speak later. So I want to make sure we don't forget.
It does look like we have another speaker, Katie, we can provide, I can provide the phone number for the Zoom after our next public speaker.
Thank you. For our next speaker, we have Dominic Aliano.
Hello, can you hear me?
Yes, we can. Please proceed.
Thank you for your time. My name is Dominic Aliano. I'm a district representative for Contra Costa County Supervisor Federal Glover, and Supervisor Federal Glover represents the Crockett community in the matter, in the area that you're discussing today. I just want to say that, you know, we appreciate the staff from the State Lands Commission on working with the community and sharing what their direction and recommendations were going to be to the commission. We do wish as a county that there was a little bit more collaboration on to figure out how we could save the waterfront within Crockett. You know, we would like to continue to have those discussions. We wish to state that we would respectfully recommend that the state would collaborate more to work with the Union Pacific Railroad to see the further development of the Crockett waterfront. And I thank you very much for your time. Thank you.
Thank you. Oh, Jennifer, Ms. Lucchese, go ahead and provide the telephone number.
Certainly. There is, you would dial 1-253-215-8782. And then you would use the webinar ID 895-4319-8848.
And then meanwhile, Katie, do we have any other speakers?
Madam Chair, at this time we have no other hands raised. I'll try to unmute Mark Manazone again to see if his audio is working.
Mr. Manzione, can you hear us?
I can hear you. Can you hear me?
Yes, we can. Please proceed.
Great. I'm not using a Zoom microphone. I'm calling in on the telephone line. Do you have me clear on clear audio?
Yes, we can hear you.
Good. Thank you. Before I even get along with my remarks, I'd like to point out to you that there's a little problem with the communications for your remote meetings. For those of us who join the Zoom to watch the presentation but dial in by telephone, you don't have any provision for notifying you that we're on the telephone rather than on the Zoom. I did provide that by email, but apparently didn't get through in time. Good. Let me proceed with my my remarks so that we can get going with the meeting. Most of my remarks have already been covered in substance by Darcy Trask, by Larry Hayden and others. So I'd like to pull out the things that are specific. I do, as a private citizen in Crockett, request that the commission consider today to defer authorizing staff for these contracts for demolition and direct the staff to re-engage with the community and provide more detailed plans about it. The main reason for this is that I see that the authorizing those contracts today would be premature because they are incomplete. And they're incomplete for reasons spoken of before, that we have existing commercial and industrial waterfront developments, which would be irretrievably removed or damaged if the contracts for demolition are pursued with as proposed. Amongst many, feel that the engagement and collaboration with the community has been insufficient. The December meeting was not that well attended. And I had two other specific factual corrections to Mr. Bookch's presentation, and they are quite relevant. In his listing of past and recent uses of that general area at the waterfront, he missed the public transportation hub. historically and up until recently, that there have continued to be uses of that area for transportation connections between water, bus, automobiles, and prior to that, ferries. Another fact I'd like to offer for correction is that it's important to recognize that the access to this location is not solely by a Union Pacific Railroad crossing. There was established and often used water access. That's an important transportation mode recognized by the State Lands Commission, vital to the Tidelands land use policies. And the County of Contra Costa recognizes it very strongly too. There is also pedestrian access along what is an unpaved road called Railroad Avenue that runs the entire length of the Crockett waterfront, and which is accessible by established railroad crossings. So to be clear, the legal and institutional problem with the specific railroad crossing at that location is not an obstacle to continued use of those commercial and industrial uses there. I'm out of town, so I'm going to cut it short and appreciate the opportunity to speak and look forward to future engagement from the FLC to the community on this matter. Bye.
Thank you very much for your comments. Katie, do we have any other speakers?
Thank you, Madam Chair. For this item, we have no other hands raised to provide comment.
Ms. Lucchese, can we hear a brief response from you?
Of course. I also want to thank and express our appreciation for the members of the community and the representatives of this town in both their love and time and energy and devotion over the many, many years, both accessing this area, having dinners at the restaurant or lunches, and then also in the most recent past couple of years, engaging with us and making sure that we are aware and understand their perspectives and concerns relating to the waterfront. We have also been very frustrated with the situation at the Crockett waterfront. There is nothing more that we would like as a staff than for that restaurant to be revitalized and by a lessee, serving the community, serving regional visitors, and also generating revenue for the state and providing access to that part of the waterfront. We have been seeking that solution for some time now and to no avail. And during that time, the restaurant, all the infrastructure that the commission is well aware of has continued to dilapidate even beyond potential repair and reuse. In fact, we've been consulting with the fire chief and it is posing a public health and safety issue. And as Brian presented, the state is paying on a continuous basis, both to secure the site as well as to deal with situations that arise that really put the public's health and safety at risk. And so the onshore facility, the restaurant and related infrastructure is in phase one because of that risk and because of the ongoing costs to the state and the recommendation and requests by the fire chief. We don't believe at this and that removal and cleaning up the waterfront of these dilapidated structures, public access. In fact, we think it's a step towards facilitating public access, whether it's passive recreational access or something more active recreationally and commercially. There's the commission has full discretion to consider applications for reuse, including building a new restaurant, putting in a new marina. And that is very consistent, frankly, with our strategic plan, as well as our underlying mission and vision for state property. So we actually think that this facilitates more discussion, more collaboration, and more opportunity for the public to access this waterfront. The situation with the railroad is challenging and difficult. I think all of us in our different experiences working both in government and in private industry know how hard working with the railroad is. And so we certainly would love to be able to access both the community and representatives on the local, state, and federal level to help negotiate more convenient and low cost access and safe across the railroad crossing. And we have been participating in those conversations and will continue to in the future because that is so fundamental to our mission. I know that the community members have expressed opposition to our staff recommendation, and I understand why. Staff stands by our recommendation because of the on-the-ground work and issues that we have been facing for some time now. And we actually will continue to stay actively engaged in finding solutions to enhance and improve public access in the way the community and regional public wants to see out there.
Thank you very much, Ms. Lucchese. So let me just reiterate for those watching that that staff is has concluded that the facilities that are there now have degraded beyond repair, so that this item, if approved, and we have a motion on the table, if approved, but we need a second, if approved, we will move forward with cleaning up the site, but that will not preclude a future tenant from leasing this location for a future use. And in fact, with the condition of the current facilities, investing in the cleanup, staff believes may help support a future tenant coming in with an application. So that is what I have heard. We have a motion on the table. Do we have a second? Commissioner Yee, do you have any comments?
Yes, thank you, Madam Chair. I will second the motion, and I do have a comment. First, thank you to all of the community members who have provided comment today. And what I would just want to reiterate and also continue to invite your engagement. I look at this as a new beginning, frankly, to what can be hopefully a reimagining of just what this particular location could be. And certainly the recommendation that we are about to act on is not meant to hinder any just foreseeable plans in the future about allowing public access. And I think it's really, as the chair said, and Ms. Lucchese, really helps facilitate that. And frankly, we're trying to really just minimize our liabilities, both for the state and for the local parties. And so I hope it can be seen in that spirit and that we are not walking away from this by any means, but really just looking for an opportunity to reengage in a way that to continue to have all of you be a part of the conversation about what this could look like going forward. So I'm happy to second the motion and really look forward to continue to engage with the community on what I think has a lot of promise in the future.
Thank you, Commissioner Yee. We have a motion by Commissioner Miller and a second by Commissioner Yee. Ms. Lucchese, will you please conduct a roll call vote?
Certainly. Commissioner Yee.
Aye.
Commissioner Miller.
Aye.
Chair Kunalakis.
Aye.
Motion passes unanimously.
Ms. Lucchese, what is the next order of business?
The next order of business is our second public comment period.
If anyone would like to address the commission on any matter that is not on today's agenda, please raise your hand and you will have 3 minutes to do so. Katie, please call on the first person who would like to make a public comment.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Our first public commenter is Wayne Addison. I do not see him on the list. So Wayne, if you could please raise your hand so I can identify you and give you permission to unmute yourself, please do so. For our next speaker, we have George Hughes. And I also do not see George on the list at this moment. Okay, so our next speaker is Del DeFarby.
Yes, good afternoon. My name is Del DeFarby, and I'm a resident of San Clemente, California. I also have a boat in the Dana Point Harbor on slip M10. So I've been faced with this increase, and I want the board to know that this increase is unfair and unjust and not in keeping with the original Tidelands Agreement. This has been changed from a public harbor to a private for-profit harbor. And as indicated by this massive rate increase, and mine is 80% increase, this is intolerable for the slip owners and the public that uses this marina. The supposed market indicators were from Newport Beach marinas, which are highly, mainly privately owned, and in some cases, controlled by the same partners that are part of this Dana Point Harbor partners. This is intolerable for all of us. We can't use the harbor as what originally intended. And I would like to recommend that the State Lands Commission request a public audit. We've been paying rent to these people for over 3 years at the rate of around $2 million per month. And I'd like to have an audit as to where this money has been going, because there has been no improvement in the harbor at all. Only fix it for damage that occurs to the slips. No improvements to the harbor at all. And so I would like to know, by way of a public audit, the people here need to know, where did all this money go and why is it hidden from us today? And why is it necessary to increase the slips so dramatically based on Newport Beach private harbors? These are questions that need to be answered. And I believe this harbor is no longer part of the original intent of the lands that were provided to the county by the state in the Tidelands Agreement and Grand Agreement. I believe this has occurred because of the need for corporate greed. And I think this could be satisfied by simply providing an audit to the people of Orange County so that we could know where all this money has been going that we've been paying every month. There have been no improvements to date. Thank you, and I appreciate your continued support.
Thank you. Katie, may we have the next speaker, please?
Thank you, Madam Chair. At this time, we have no other hands raised for the second general public comment.
Okay. Do any of the commissioners have any comments or questions at this time? Ms. Lucchese, what is our next order of business?
Our next order of business is closed session. We will be conducting our closed session by conference call. Commissioners, please email me or call my cell phone if you need the call-in information. For the commissioners and staff participating in the closed session, upon adjournment, please turn off your webcam and, if possible, go into a different room. This will ensure confidentiality of our discussions.
Thank you very much. We will now adjourn into closed session.
ready to go back into public session when you give us the go ahead.
Sounds great. We're all recording and broadcasting. The floor is yours.
Thank you. I call this meeting back to order. Ms. Lucchese, is there anything to report from closed session?
No.
Very good. Well, thank you everyone for your participation. And that concludes the open meeting. We are adjourned.
Thank you.